Aaron Suttles, Cole Kublik, Landrum Roberts. This is Three Man Front's post game on Jocks 94.5.
We're joined by a very special guest here in studio. This is our annual visit. Well, actually, it was not you that came in last time to promote the event, but it's Russell Branham of the Talladega Super Speedway.
I was here, though. I was standing there. You were actually taking
the pictures. But yeah. We're going to talk to you today. We got a special event coming up. It's going to be the 15th annual Alabama Wildlife Federation Wild Game Cook-Off. It's an event that I've actually taken part in. I've actually competed in this event, and that you have them around the state of Alabama through the Alabama Wildlife Federation. But this one actually takes place at the Talladega Super Speedway. I was able to, you guys were gracious enough to ask me to come and be one of the judges last year. And you've brought us some great food here in studio. We've got, what is this, venison, the summer sausage?
This is a venison sausage here that you have in one area here. And both you and Cole just ate the venison chili, or sometimes called goulash, that one Hannah Kinderknecht from our staff made yesterday.
Hannah Kay,
that's exactly right. Did a great job, right?
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. It's odd because I grew up eating goulash. My mom's side of the family is they have of German descent, and we would have goulash every Thanksgiving, every Christmas. And I hated it as a kid. I like it now, but, you know, as an 8, 9, 10-year-old, when that's all the family's eating, and I had pretty stubborn grandparents, and they're not making anything else for the kids. You'll never forget that word.
I can remember corned beef and cabbage being the disappointment that I showed my mom when she said, "That's what we're having." I said, "Well, what are we having?
We're having fries with that?"
She said, "Well,
is there pizza?
You can have corned beef and cabbage. You're not going to get to eat tonight.
If you don't like it, you don't have to eat it, right?"
That's right. So we want to tell folks about this, the 15th annual Alabama Wildlife Federation Wild Game Cook-Off. It's coming up on Saturday. That is Leap Day, February 29th.
Yep.
And look, this is going to happen in Big Bill's Open Air Social Club, which I know you guys are excited about, just to show off to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the big 35,000 square foot open air social club that we introduced last October, and this is going to let people who haven't been there before, or say haven't been to the racetrack in a few years, come out, see the racetrack in a different vein. No race cars or anything this weekend. It's going to be a race to see who can win this cook-off competition. But we love to be able to show off the facility. And, you know, last year was a $50 million project with transformation, and it's something to behold. And if you haven't been out there yet, this is a great way to come out, enjoy some tasty food, a lot of delicacies from a lot of great chefs. We have right now over 42 teams that are lined up to come in.
Oh, that's outstanding.
That's exactly right. So there's going to be a lot of sampling amongst our judges. And, again, you're going to miss it this year, Landrum. We're a little disappointed in that. I know Dunaway and Brown will be there to represent Jocks.
Yeah, so, and
you know, I don't know about that.
Right? I don't know if that's good for the contestant, to be honest. I don't know how sophisticated. Now, Dunaway, I Jim strikes me, because I've been in those settings with him, as – maybe a little bit of a snob when it comes to food.
Well, wow. He'll tell you he has good taste.
He does have
pretty much
taste.
Every aspect, yeah. Right?
And Brown has a very sophisticated palate, so I think you're good there.
Yeah. So it's a great thing to see all the folks that come in from across the state. You know, we have big grills, there are big fryers, there's pots and pans everywhere. The folks that participate, these 42 teams, you'll be able to go and see exactly how they set up their area. I mean, this is a professional deal. They come in and make sure everything is just beautiful. But if you do get it, you come and buy a ticket, $40 per person or $50 for a couple. If you come in, you get to have all your beverages for free, plus you get to sample every one of the delicacies that each cook-off team has made. So it's pretty cool.
Russell Branham, Talladega Super Speedway. We're talking about the Alabama Wildlife Federation Wild Game Cook-Off coming up Saturday. He just told you we'll tell you more on how to get information to the event. So, yeah, I competed in this event, and we did it here locally in the Birmingham region. And there's different regions around the state. But what is so cool about this is you find out all the creative ways of what people can do with whether it's the game division, the fowl division, the fish division.
Absolutely.
And how the presentations and just the links that they go to with some of these dishes, you know, they work hard on it. I know we did in just getting prepared and then going and trying to prepare it. It's pretty special. And if you've never tried it, you need to go and experience it.
Did you ever think that you would taste pheasant or duck or wild boar, bear, squirrel, all those types of things? But these cooks are so incredible. They make it into, whether it be a stew or it's something fried or venison a certain type way. It's all about the presentation and then how it tastes. And it has just been such a huge success here for 15 years. You must give it a try because it is some amazing recipes that these folks are coming up with and just unbelievably tasty.
Yeah, the pheasant, we did. We actually prepared pheasant 1 year. We did some rabbit 1 year. We had rattlesnake tacos 1 year that we actually.
What's your favorite, if you had to guess, when you're looking at wild game or fish fowl, something like that, that you normally wouldn't eat, but you think back something that was really, really good, what would be that?
That I normally wouldn't eat? See, that's a tough question to ask me because I'm always willing to try whatever.
Right.
I mean, the rattlesnake, that was different. And just trying to prepare it and get all the tiny little, there's a lot of little bones, what looks like bones, cartilage, whatever that's in there. I'm trying to think what else. Turtle.
Never had turtle.
Tasty? Yeah. Look, if you prepare anything the right way, it's going to be tasty. Yeah. I think. I mean, I only had a couple of things that I don't care how you prepare it. It's just not good.
Right.
So I would say probably turtle.
Look, I'm a guy who doesn't like collard greens. People
see,
think I'm crazy.
See, so what? Yeah. No collard greens for you?
No collard greens for me.
Why?
No. I grew up in South Carolina and all my friends love it. My family loves it. But for some reason, my palate, no.
Venison? You like venison?
Love venison. Okay. This is what's amazing. I'm very, very picky on some things, but when it comes to the wild game, I'm in. I mean, I haven't tasted anything out there that I did not like every year, and this is my, seventh or eighth one.
We were at the state finals, humble brag, because we had won the Birmingham region, and these guys, and I'm trying to remember the cook team that was there, it was an entire alligator that was on a wood plank that they had smoked overnight.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get. And then you'll get things like you might have a venison pizza. You might have, I saw a lobster pot pie.
Absolutely.
That was really, really good.
Yeah.
Just the variety of dishes that you see here and getting to go. And these people are so passionate that are competing. It's really, really fun.
I was looking at last year's, the thing that won last year's state final in Millbrook, Alabama. Wild boar duo with mushroom risotto and Jack Daniel's honey glaze with micro beans.
Oh, yeah. They went all out.
Yummy.
I think the...
I'm not familiar with micro beans, but the rest of it sounded good.
Was it micro beans or micro greens?
Beans.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So...
They had a 1 year, we finished second in the state. We had like a crab cake, an Alabama like crab cake, and we did it, you know, with a homemade remoulade and over some greens with a... you know, sauce or whatever. And the team that beat us, they had a stuffed redfish and it was stuffed with like crab meat. And the way that they prepared it, I was like, hats off to you.
Creativity is, that is the top of the game for this weekend. Whenever you're talking about this, you have to be creative in what you prepare. You have to be creative in the presentation of it. It's just really cool to see how folks can create these things that you never would think about. And it's just so doggone good. So, we're looking forward to it. It's always something that's great. You know, fans that are people that come out, also that may have never taken a lap around the racetrack, for $25, again, it'll be a donation to the Wildlife Federation. For $25, you can also ride. We'll take you around for a lap in the one of our pace cars. So, well, it may be a pace car. It might be another car, but we will take you around for a hot lap just for $25. 4 o'clock, we open the gates. But when it gets dark, since we don't have lights, we have to cut the rides off. But that's something pretty cool, too.
Absolutely. I did want to ask you one racing question, because obviously there are a lot of similarities between you guys in Daytona. When you see what happened with Ryan Newman at the end of that race, is there anything that sort of alerts you guys? Do you begin to prepare differently? Do you look at the race that's coming up in a different way? What does that do to you guys as far as preparing for your first race of the season that is going to be coming up on April 26th?
I think, you know, we always feel like we're prepared, but we always look for ways to try to get better. Just from a planning perspective, we go through every race where we sit down and we go through from A to Z, everything that we need to make sure that we're ready for. The great thing about, if there is anything that is great, is being able to see Ryan Newman walk out of the hospital.
Amen.
And I think it's just an incredible credit to what NASCAR has done for safety.
I saw some of the stats that they had. The first responder was there in his car. I think it was 12 seconds after the car stopped. And then the EMTs were on site like 22 seconds. It was ridiculous numbers how quickly they were there responding.
But that's what they're trained for. You know, we will have safety units as well that are positioned all throughout the racetrack, all on the inside of the pit. Oh, there's various cutouts of walls on the inside of the racetracks. So if we do happen to have an accident, no matter where it is, there's easy access for them to be able to get out there and get quick to the car to make sure everything is okay. But NASCAR, through their research and development program there in Concord, North Carolina, it's a constant thing where they are trying to seek ways, trying to think about what could happen, and if that did happen, how do we combat that? And so there's been a lot of research over the years where they have, I mean, it's safety is the number one concern for NASCAR whenever you're talking about putting on NASCAR races. Sure. And here at Talladega, one of the things that we did, I mean, so if you look at NASCAR, you're looking at the cars. They're having to make sure that the cars are the very, very best that they can be. A few years ago, they moved the driver over a little bit into the compartment. Mm-hmm. So that driver is not necessarily right there beside that roll cage. They're on the left side, on the driver's side of a car. And so they have moved the driver over a little bit more toward the center of the car.
That could have saved his life, because it appeared as though the roll cage over the driver's side door was actually pushed in a little bit.
Right, and they've also instituted more roll cage, more roll bars. Actually, one of the ones that was put in there Ryan Newman actually is the one that recommended that years ago after he was in another accident. So they look at different ways of how can we make sure that the cars are the very, very best they can be. Also, how do we make sure that the tracks are too? So I think it's been about 4 years ago, we actually put safer barrier all the way around the racetrack on the inside of the outside retaining wall. And then also on the inside walls, we've got safer barrier as well. So we were one of the first tracks that put it all the way around, both inside wall and the outside wall. And basically that's to be, if a car does go up and hit the wall, there's flexibility in that wall now where it's not just a solid hit. But I just think it's a testament of what NASCAR is really. They work with the race teams, they work with engineers, they work with everybody.
Wow.
This just makes me happy.
Oh.
It just makes me
giddy.
Happy.
Like, get on Christmas. I mean, 20-something years ago, would any of us have ever thought that this
he's the one we need to ask that question to. I think we'd probably be towards the bottom of the list of guys that he thought would be sitting here hosting a radio show interviewing him.
Hall of Fame coach, high school coach, Homewood High School, Coach Bob Newton, here with us on Three Man Front. Hey, Coach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us. So when you got the phone call, what to come up here and join us, were you just, hey, what's going to happen? Did you think you were getting set up? Just take me to that process.
Well, thank goodness I recognized Cole's voice. And so I didn't fall for a trick or anything. I thought, but then when he said what he wanted me to do, I said, are you sure? Are you sure about that? I don't know. But I'm always glad to see y'all.
Well,
always.
And what's really cool is how many guys that just work here at this station or in our cluster that you actually coach. John Lunsford. You walked by and saw him, of course, Sly King. He's there with our sister station at Hot and many others. I don't think Lance ever
he wasn't going on the football field.
He wasn't going on the football field.
I had Lance, but in one period, baseball went over the field and had to work all day one time. Lance worked pretty hard that day. Yeah.
He's a hard worker. Yeah, I don't know if he wanted to deal with the physicality of football.
I can't see Lance, though, doing any kind of manual labor.
He would be able to convince other people to do it for him.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would definitely happen. What is your – just so the listeners know, Coach Newton was my high school football coach, Landrum's high school football coach. Tell our listeners what your first memory is of each one of us.
Well, first memory, well, I knew Landrum a little bit earlier because he was running around with Bert, or one of his sons.
One of your sons, correct.
And then first time I saw you, I thought, golly, that guy, he could be pretty good. He's got good size. And I really saw you in Little League first.
Little League baseball,
playing third base, I believe it was. And so I just kept up with you, and and you grew and you improved, and we all got better, I think.
What was the worst thing you saw me do as a Little League baseball player?
Trying to hit a home run on every pitch.
I thought you were going to be much more specific than that. Like, there was a few times you had to excuse me from practice for All-Stars, but we'll leave those out.
Well, you were always willing to work hard, and that's but it just sometimes you want to do it your way, and it wasn't always wrong.
Hey, Coach, and here's the thing. We bust each other's you know what's every single day. You don't have to sugarcoat anything, okay? You don't have to sugarcoat anything. Yeah. Just tell it like it is, because we know that we have those stories. You coached. I was a part of a couple of All-Star teams that you coached there in Little League, and there's some memorable things that happened there too.
That's a long time ago. I can't.
So I will go ahead and I'll tell the story. It was a practice game we were playing, and I had hit a ball down the third base line that I thought was foul, and I didn't run it out. And Coach Newton, I ended up getting to first base. Umpire ruled it fair. Coach Newton did not appreciate me. If you want to go Ronald Acuna here, I kind of went Ronald Acuna. I did not run it out. I ended up
not
getting to first base. Coach Newton let me know pretty quick when I got to first base. I didn't even, in hindsight, I wish I had not even gone to first base. I wish I had just gone back to the dugout. He got on to me pretty good. But it was always tough love with you, Coach. And that's why we respected you so much.
Well, we always try to treat people fairly. And I've always enjoyed the kids I've worked with. Always have. That doesn't mean I don't get mad at them sometimes. But it's I've been very blessed to have kids that wanted to do well, and that's all you can ask them. You know, try to do their very best.
Do you miss it? And how much does it help that both of your sons have gone into coaching? Because I know that keeps you a little bit closer to it as well. Just being able to be around what they're doing.
I see plenty of football still. You know, and I enjoy going to watch both of them perform and coaching. But I had my time. You know, 36 years was. That's enough.
You grew up in Russellville, Alabama,
yes,
correct?
Right.
And then played at Samford.
Right.
So when you go back to thinking about some of your first memories of high school football and then what it was on the tail end of your career, what surprised you the most just about what changed and how much it changed?
When I was in high school, it was just if you could out-hit the other guy, just be bigger and stronger maybe. And I wasn't big like y'all are, like you are now, but I went about 215 in high school, and then ended up being about 250 in college. But it's just it gets faster and better every year, it seems like. You know, and I don't know. They have running backs now weigh 245, 240, 250, some of them. But it's been changed. But still, it's where the people that want to do it inside their heart. You know, I think they're the ones that still make the difference. You know.
Coach Bob Newton joining us here in studio on Three Man Front, Jocks 94.5. Coach, obviously you played your high school ball at Russellville, as you just talked about, and you're there in the Franklin County Hall of Fame. I know you're in the Alabama High School Sports Hall of Fame. But you also went on to play at Samford. And when you were there at Samford, you played with another coach that a lot of people in this area, I believe, will know very well. And I think he's still coaching.
He is. You're talking about Buddy Anderson. He was a year ahead of me in school there, but he was he played with us, and Buddy's he's an all-time coach in Alabama. He's won more ball games, and I don't think anybody will ever break it.
Well, you were a coach, and you served as an assistant for so long before you took over for Coach Gann when he left Homewood for Hoover, and we had this discussion yesterday on the show, or it was after the show, we were just talking about, all right, how many guys can we name off the top of our heads that actually played at Homewood that were D1 guys that went on to sign D1 scholarships and had significant roles? I go back to the first guy in that you coached that had a long NFL career, and it was Chris Gray. And just tell us about Chris Gray, because he was a tight end and defensive end when he played at Homewood?
He was a defensive end most of the time, and he played some at tight end, and he went to Auburn thinking he was going to keep playing tight end, but they had two pretty good ones down there, and Chris went ahead and played 13 or 14 years in the pros, I believe, and he really did a great thing, great job, and he was a great young man. You know, he played hard and didn't fuss with anybody, just did his job, and he got better, I think, even from high school.
That's what I was going to ask you. Was he one of those guys when you were coaching him, you saw, like, He's got the potential to go and have a long NFL career. I don't know how you could.
Well, you never know about that, but you know, I thought he would. He had good feet. He had good. He was really great shape and great. He just grew and kept growing, and he ended up being an outstanding offensive lineman which is great. I think offensive linemen don't get enough credit sometimes.
Well, we appreciate Coach Newton being in the studio. We don't hear that very much. I remember talking to Chris about how he prepared for the combine, which it's starting this week, and it's so different now. And he said, I don't know, man. I just went out and I put some weights on the sled, and I pushed the sled around, tried to get faster, and went and ran sprints and did my regular weightlifting routine, and that was it. He just went and did it on his own and did what he was going to do. Started in the Super Bowl for Seattle, so hell of a football player. Aaron Feld's a guy whose name comes up a lot right now, and he's a strength coach at Oregon. Everybody knows him because his mustache and his hair and his demeanor, and obviously I think there's a lot of people that are just rooting for him to get the strength and conditioning job at Alabama. Give us your memories of Aaron Feld as a football player for you.
Aaron was a very hard worker. He worked hard in the weight room, and he was a great high school football player, and he did a good job, and he's continued to work in his strength development stuff, and he's in position to probably make some big moves here. And so he was very, very helpful in that group. That group was had some good players in it, but Aaron was sort of the glue for some of those guys.
Go ahead.
When you had somebody, I'm thinking, because we mentioned Little League Baseball earlier, and obviously I have 2-year-old, 4-year-old now. When you come across a kid who has maybe some attitude issues or had a temper and like the throws bad after he struck out, maybe talk back to the coach. There was a lot of tough love with our relationship from when I was probably 8 years old on. But what you knew how to do is find that balance in not necessarily attacking me every time I did something wrong. How do you know to sort of juggle that or balance that with certain individuals as not to send them off more into being a bad egg or a bad apple or kind of going off the deep end a little bit more than they did? Because that's how you handled me as a really, really young athlete.
Well, I think you have to first, don't let it get under your skin too much. You got to be willing to work with them, and you got to be willing to you got to take interest in them, not just in their athletic stuff, but just in them as people. And you just got to hope that the things you're doing are going to make a difference and in the right way. And that's sometimes we don't know, but I've always felt like we always kept people involved at Homewood and playing games, and very, very few times did we lose one of them. One of my big things was I wanted people to play other sports also, not just one sport. I wanted them to be well rounded and play as many things as they could handle. You never know. It's always different with different people, And sometimes, most of the time, people will see what you're trying to do and say, hey, okay, let me try that way for a little while. It's no guarantee on any of us, but, we.
Guy who knows a lot about high school sports. It is Pat Smith. He's got 5 questions. And this is what we call Pat Ponders.
I want to know what you're thinking. Tell me what's on your mind.
It's time for Pat Ponders.
It's brought to you every single day by Alabama Roofing Professionals. Give Mike and the gang a call. They do great work. They're going to warranty their work. Free inspections. They told you yesterday, Kelsey, she actually had them come out. Kelsey works with us here at Cumulus. They gave her a quote, did the work in the very same day, and she was very, very happy. That's what they're going to do for you. 205-722-ROOF or alroofpros.com. That's Alabama Roofing Professionals.
Question number one, guys. Ready for this? I'm going to give you a multiple choice.
Okay?
Talking about the combine a lot this week. Combine started back in 1982. What was the original name of the event? Was it A, NFL Draft Camp, B, National Football Scouting Incorporated, or C, Professional Football Skills Challenge? Which one of those three
was the
official name? A was NFL Draft Camp. B was National Football Scouting Incorporated, or C, Professional Football Skills Challenge.
NFL Draft Camp.
I'm going to go A. Yeah. I usually do not do good with Pat Smith multiple choice questions.
All right. So you're going to go A, both of you gentlemen, correct?
Correct.
The very first combine, as we call it now, back in 1982, was called National Football Scouting Incorporated. It was a much smaller event than it is today, obviously, as only the high-level prospects were invited. Today, all players projected to be drafted get the invite. Back in 1982, the event was held in Tampa. Cities like Phoenix and New Orleans hosted the combine until Indianapolis became its home back in 1987.
Seems like a really long title for your event. Be hard to put on a t-shirt. I guess you
National
just go
Football
Inc.
Scouting Inc. That's what it was called. 1982.
Sounds more like a company than an event.
Hey, by the way, I was looking at the Wonderlic scores all time. Do you know the position groups that have averaged the best scores? Offensive tackles and centers.
I was going to say offensive line is one, but yeah.
And quarterbacks,
not,
too.
Not really surprising.
All right, guys, question number two. During your lifetime, in your opinion, who was the best pure scorer in SEC basketball history?
Pure scorer?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
I don't know why this guy comes to mind, but immediately I just think Ron Mercer. Because he just had a beautiful jump shot, and I feel like he could get open. And
I don't know why this guy comes to mind, but I go Allen Houston.
It's not a bad one.
I think Allen Houston finished maybe 10th all-time in the most points in a season in the SEC. But he's a top 10, no question. Do you know who's number one in the SEC? Average points per season.
Average points per season.
He averaged 30.
But you're asking for his career, correct?
No, I'm not asking. He had a season where he had 30 points. That was his average. And then he also finished third with 28 points in a season.
I mean, I would probably say Pete Maravich. I don't know why it wouldn't be.
Chris Jackson.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, could shoot it.
All right, guys, question number three. So far, the Astros have played 5 spring training games, and 7 times Houston players have been hit by a pitch. Seeing the animosity displayed towards the Astros already in spring training, do you believe the team will be hit more than what Vegas has given the odds of 80.5 for the season?
Yeah, I do not.
No?
No, because I went back and looked up the numbers, and I think the average is between 55 and 65 on a season, and I just don't think – again, this hurts your team to do this.
Right, you're giving up a free base.
You put a runner on, and then you're probably going to get one of your guys hit. There's a good chance that also happens. So it's a double whammy.
All right, guys, question number 4. Pretty simple question. Worst movie you ever saw in a theater?
Weekend at Bernie's.
Thin Red Line. I walked out of it. I don't think it's the only movie I've ever walked out of.
What was wrong with Weekend at Bernie's?
I don't know.
Now, the second one was terrible.
Maybe I went and saw 2. Just remember, it was Weekend at Bernie's. It's like, this guy's still dead.
I think it was kind of a funny movie.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm trying to think.
Landrum doesn't like funny movies.
No, he's too serious.
I do like funny movies. I can't really think of one another
so
one.
So did
that
you
really
walk out of the
out.
Movie or you sat there and
no,
then you
I
said,
sat
now
there.
This sucks.
No, I'm not. I mean, I'd already paid the money for it. I was going to just sit there.
So Cole, why did you just walk out?
It was awful. I just remember it being awful. We went and saw it as a team. And I went and sat on the bus. I was like, I'm done. This is, I can't do it.
Just couldn't take it.
Just wasn't, I don't know. And no, I've had people tell me that they think it's a good movie, but what I remember of it, watching it, I couldn't get into it.
There were movies that I fell asleep in. But that's just because it.
Just because you were.
Well, it was air conditioned and it was dark. It was just easy for me to fall asleep as a kid.
So mine was The Wedding Ringer, like with the Kevin Hart. It wasn't his. Like, he's funny, but that wasn't the.
It wasn't his movie, yeah.
No, not at all.
What was yours?
Joe versus the Volcano.
Okay. Just by that title.
You know who played in it?
It was
Tom Hanks.
That's right. Tom Hanks was in that movie.
It was terrible. Absolutely awful. I think Meg, was it Meg Ryan? Was she in it with him?
I don't remember.
Are you thinking,
Look that up, Cole. Joe versus the Volcano.
You thinking Sleepless? Bad.
No, I mean, they played in a bunch of movies together.
Were they in You Got Mail, too?
It was a bunch of movies together.
Yes, it was Meg Ryan.
Yeah. It was like Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler playing in all those movies together.
62% on the tomato meter.
Wow. It was bad.
And there were some movies.
Why don't you rent it tonight, Landrum? Watch it. Give us a report tomorrow.
Calling high school basketball tonight. But, like, there were some movies back then that I would never go see in the theater. First of all, you saw the duration, like 3 hours and 15 minutes. Like, wasn't Dances with Wolves? Like,
it was long.
Really long?
Absolutely. Worth then, it, though. Great movie.
But I ended up watching it, you know, as I got older and really appreciated it. Yeah. So.
All right, guys, fifth and final question for today's Pat Ponders. Once again, I'll end it with multiple choice for you guys.
All right.
Okay. Most likely to happen in the next 10 years. I repeat, most likely to happen in the next 10 years. A, confirmation of alien life. B, free college tuition for all. C, Arkansas wins the SEC in football. Or D, none of the above.
I think it's a cop-out to say most likely none of the above. So I'm actually going to give you an answer, and I'm going to say that we confirm alien life form before Arkansas wins the SEC and before, what was the other option?
Free college tuition. Yeah,
I'll let you know after November.
Because when you say that, then that means Stanford and Harvard and Vanderbilt have to give free tuition away as well, and they're not doing that.
Right. That's not going to happen.
Oh.
Well, according to someone that's running for president.
I just said I will let you know after November.
Yes.
If I think that's a possibility.
I think there are ways individual universities could get around that.
Well, if you're private, but if you're a private school, that's one thing. But if you're considered a public university, that would maybe separate it.
So alien life will be confirmed before Arkansas wins the SEC championship in the next 10 years.
And I do not believe in aliens. And I don't even have a theory that there is another life form out there somewhere. I'm not saying that I even believe that. But Arkansas ain't winning the SEC in our lifetime.
In the next decade.
In our lifetime.
Lifetime.
Our lifetime.
You're telling me E.T. wasn't real?
Our lifetime.
E.T. wasn't
real? Our lifetime. So I guess I am telling you that because I'm telling you that it will happen before.
Wait, what did Landrum choose? You said let me, after November.
Yeah. I don't believe Arkansas will win in the next 10 years either. I would go D, none of the above.
Yeah, of course I knew you would go that
route. Of course you would. Yeah.
Okay.
France strikes again.
All right, guys, that's today's Pat Ponders.
Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com, joining us on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline.
Barrett, we heard from Tim Brewster a little bit earlier, some audio of him discussing Florida's recruiting and how it pertains to them against Georgia moving forward. How would you describe the recruiting under Dan Mullen in Gainesville so far?
I would say adequate to above adequate, but that is by Florida standards. I think when you put it in perspective to you know what they have to fight against Georgia and the SEC East, it's not going to be effective enough. They Georgia is in a different world. It's on a different playing field than everybody else in that division, and really different than it has ever been, as a program in general. So while it's nice that Florida has these decent recruiting classes, these top 10 classes, that's not going to get the job done on a consistent basis. It might get the job done in specific years when chips fall in the right direction or whatever from a personnel standpoint, but it is not going to keep them ahead of Georgia long term. So, it is about the Jimmies and the Joes. I understand that Dan feels like he can coach everybody up, and maybe he can to an extent, but if you got the players that Georgia has, it's hard to screw that up. It really is.
Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com, joining us here on the Bud Light Seltzer Highlight. You can follow him on Twitter @BarrettSalee. There was a story by AL.com's Tom Green that came out, and it was discussing Chad Morris, his contract and what it entails. It's a multi-year contract. And also one Jack Bicknell. He gets a couple of years, which is kind of uncommon now for Auburn assistants if you're not Kevin Steele. Do you think that says anything about the certainty of one Gus Malzahn and Auburn making that commitment to his surrounding support staff?
No, I think it signals more than anything else that that he wants to create stability. He wants to create the impression that that Chad's going to have full control. I don't believe him, and I will not believe it until I actually see it. But I think he understands, and I think Auburn understands that you know, Chad's not going to be a head coach next year, and it's not going to get much better for Chad next year than being the offensive coordinator at Auburn. So why not lock him down to a multi-year deal? Because really, it's going to happen anyway. Like, there's no doubt. Unless the whole staff gets let go, Chad's going to be back. So, I think it's more just a recruiting tool like anything else. Schools do giving coaches an extra year just because, it gives off the impression of consistency. And maybe they are going to be consistent. If Chad Morris does have full control and he has it for more than 1 year, maybe it is consistency. But I think all it is right now is creating a perception that, Auburn needs, and really any school needs, that kind of a perception that nothing's going to change over the course of several years at the program.
What can you learn that you feel like you need to learn about this Auburn football team during spring practice?
Oh man, during spring practice, what the offensive line looks like, because it's been good, it's been bad, it's just really been inconsistent. So, what the offensive line looks like, and how they're going to help, that running game. Because I think that Bo Nix was solid, but Bo Nix under pressure, to me at times he got a little ahead of himself. So just how the offensive line protects him, how the offensive line opens holes for the running backs. And really with the running backs, is it going to be DJ Williams' show? I mean, Sean Shivers is mostly going to focus on track, but, he's going to have a big part of this. So who is DJ Williams? Is he the kind of guy who can carry it 25 times a game? That'll be big too. And birth in the college football playoff. And I know folks will say, well, that's not back. Well, for Notre Dame, 10 wins, I mean, anybody would kill for 10-win seasons every year, because certain times it's going to mean you have a shot at a national championship, and they did 2 years ago. So for Tom Herman, sort of the same thing. After that 4-8 year, Kelly wasn't necessarily on the hot seat, but he was kind of on the lukewarm seat, and Herman's kind of in that same spot now after three seasons, and especially last season's 7-5 regular season, which should not have happened based on the personnel that they had. They're very comparable. A lot of pressure, high-profile programs, falling on hard times, not living up to expectations, with solid rosters that need to perform quickly. So, I think what they'll talk about today, to me, is Brian Kelly's attitude. Because Tom Herman, he appears like he's more laid back on the sideline. I think that's just his disposition. He's not like that in real life. Brian Kelly, was not like that either, but he changed. And I think that was a big part of Notre Dame turning things around after that season. So I would imagine it's a lot about program administration and attitude from the head coach more than anything else, because I believe that's the biggest reason why Notre Dame has won 10 or more games in three straight seasons.
Barrett, it was Kirby Smart that goes and hires Scott Cochran away from Nick Saban. What was the motive? What was the message he was trying to send?
I think he was trying to chip away at the foundation of Alabama, and he did it. Scott Cochran is one of the foundations, or one of the pieces of that foundation. There's no doubt about it. Nick Saban says it consistently, and everybody around that program knows it. So I think it was trying to chip away at that foundation. He obviously did a good job. I think there's it's not necessarily a huge risk for Scott to be on the sidelines in a special teams coordinator role as much maybe as people think it is. He did run the scout team, special teams at Alabama at times. You know, he was viewed by Lane Kiffin as somebody who was ready for this. He was viewed, obviously, by Kirby Smart as a guy who was ready for this. And so, you know, I think more than anything else, it's a statement that that Georgia is not going to be intimidated by Alabama, and that, you know, it's trying to chip away at Alabama even when they're not playing games against each other or just playing games in general. And that's why it's a bigger deal for Alabama than it is for Georgia. I mean, I think, you know, Scott Cochran can probably be a pretty good special teams coordinator, but they've got such a big support staff that, you know, if things don't work out as planned, you know, there's some backup there. So, you know, I think the message was pretty simple, that Georgia feels like it's a threat, and it's a threat 365, 24/7, not just during the fall.
I haven't seen details of the contract, but I'm assuming it's going to be more than most special teams coaches across the country are making, because he obviously had to lure him away from Alabama and Nick Saban. And I don't believe Georgia fans will ever truly get frustrated with this, but do you believe we're nearing a time that nationally, and maybe even a little bit stronger from a regional perspective, fans are going to begin to call Georgia out on the amount of money that they're spending on that program if they don't get a championship?
That'll happen, but I don't think it's going to happen, you know, this year. You know, I think the thing with Georgia, and sort of getting back to what I talked about with Notre Dame, Georgia has played in the SEC championship game with a college football playoff berth on the line for three straight seasons. Yeah, they want to win a championship. There's no doubt about that. But playing in what amounts to a de facto national quarterfinal for three straight seasons is about the best any program can ask for outside of Clemson and Alabama. So, I mean, there's some frustration, and yeah, the bar was raised a couple years ago when they went to the national championship game and all that stuff. But, you know, I think cooler heads are going to prevail for Georgia. I think there's a vocal, you know, minority out there that are already frustrated with it. But, I mean, you go to the SEC championship game every single season with a playoff berth on the line. I mean, they've won one of those games, you know, so it's not like they're, you know, they're tanking every time they get there either. So I don't know what any program other than maybe Alabama and Clemson in this era can expect. I mean, that's, you know, there are a lot of really good teams and really good coaches out there, and you're not going to win every single time.
He is Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com. You can always follow him on Twitter, as we do, @BarrettSalee. Barrett, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, guys, thanks.